A doctor walks away from 12 years of training and practice, not because of burnout, that sterile corporate term that makes exhaustion sound like a software glitch. No, Adam Kay left medicine because he watched a mother hemorrhage 12 liters of blood while her baby died, and he couldn't stop either tragedy. His hands, trained for years to heal, became instruments of his own psychological torture. What makes someone abandon a career they've sacrificed everything for? The answer lies in the diaries he kept throughout his medical training, raw, unfiltered accounts that oscillate between laugh-out-loud comedy and soul-crushing tragedy. These weren't meant for publication. They were survival mechanisms, ways to process the absurdity and horror of life as a junior doctor in the UK's National Health Service. Yet, they became a cultural phenomenon, selling over 2.5 million copies worldwide because they revealed what healthcare systems desperately try to hide. Doctors are human, and the system is breaking them. Medicine wasn't a calling for Kay. It was inheritance. Born into a Jewish family with a doctor father, attending a prestigious school, he found himself on a predetermined conveyor belt. At 16, he committed to a lifelong career based on family expectations and television medical dramas. Medical schools never checked if candidates could handle blood, death, or the psychological weight of holding lives in their hands. After 6 years at Imperial College memorizing anatomy, Kay emerged with encyclopedic knowledge, but zero preparation for the Jekyll and Hyde existence awaiting him. Mind-numbing paperwork by day, sole responsibility for entire hospital wards by night. His first day began inauspiciously with a misspelled email address, adam.k@nhs.net. His first patient death came brutally, a man bleeding from esophageal varices, blood spraying everywhere as Kay stood frozen. By the time his senior colleague arrived and inserted the treatment tube, the patient was dead. They silently changed into scrubs and shared Kay's first ever cigarette outside. Yet amidst the horror came triumph. Kay saved his first life, a 68-year-old with dangerously low oxygen. Acting on autopilot, he administered oxygen, established IV access, gave diuretics, inserted a catheter. The patient improved immediately. As Kay progressed through training, responsibilities multiplied while support vanished. The NHS randomly relocated doctors every 6 to 12 months, preventing stability. He lived in temporary rentals, rarely home enough to avoid unoccupied insurance status. The training philosophy was see one, do one, teach one, if you were lucky to see one first. Without YouTube tutorials, Kay memorized procedures from textbooks, then performed them while projecting confidence despite internal panic. His first cesarean was terrifying. His senior introduced him to the patient as her surgeon, giving no escape. Kay cut through human skin for the first time, opened a uterus, delivered a baby. Too focused on each step to appreciate the moment, the procedure took 55 minutes instead of the standard 20-25. The European Working Time Directive theoretically limited doctors to 48 hours weekly. Kay once worked 97 hours in a single week. The exhaustion became dangerous. Kay once woke up asleep at traffic lights with an old man tapping his window. Management forbade napping during night shifts, insisting doctors were paid to work full shifts. But would you prefer your emergency C-section performed by someone who caught 40 minutes sleep or someone forced awake for 36 hours straight? Medicine's relationship with bodily fluids is uniquely matter-of-fact. During his first week on labor ward, Kay was baptized in blood when a patient hemorrhaged spectacularly after delivery. Once sorted and transfused, the patient recovered, but Kay had to change his blood-soaked scrubs and boxers, contemplating the irony of catching HIV this way rather than through any activity his friends would believe. Foreign objects and bodily orifices became a recurring theme. Most patients suffered from Eiffel syndrome. I fell, doctor. One patient's sofa and remote control story almost seemed credible until they noticed the condom on the remote. Another arrived with a foot of metal pole protruding from her abdomen after impaling herself on park railings while fleeing police. Miraculously, CT showed no organ damage. Most disturbing was the sex worker who had lost a Fireman Sam bath sponge in her vagina. She'd been using it as a menstrual barrier for 3 months so she could continue working. The smell made Kay retch and sent the nurse fleeing. This gallows humor serves as a crucial coping mechanism. After a cesarean, Kay discovered a missing surgical swab. Just as they prepared to reopen the patient, a midwife ran in. The baby was holding it. Relief all around, except for the scrub nurse who called the baby a thieving little cunt, not realizing the father and baby were standing right behind her. Behind the professional facade, doctors carry patients' tragedies without outlet. Kay was called when a midwife couldn't find a heartbeat in a 32-week pregnant GP married to an ophthalmology registrar. The patient already knew before Kay confirmed fetal death on ultrasound. She shifted into work mode while her husband fell apart. You shouldn't have to bury your child. Days later, Kay saw them in labor after induction. They seemed oddly pleased to see him, a familiar face who understood. Kay felt woefully untrained for grieving couples. He stuck to practical information and stayed well past his shift. After midnight delivery, he took necessary samples from the macerated baby, the worst part of this job. "I'm sorry," he whispered, looking up to a God he didn't believe in. "Look after him." These burdens accumulate without outlet. A house officer attempted suicide with antidepressants, a harmless dose, but signaling profound distress. Kay noted they were all numb, but unsurprised. They worked with huge responsibility, minimal supervision, zero support, constantly feeling inadequate. In any other profession, a suicide attempt would trigger an inquiry. In medicine, they just heard through gossip. The profession's toll on relationships was equally devastating. Kay's friend tried ending their friendship after Kay missed his engagement party, stag do, wedding, his father's funeral, and his daughter's christening. Even on Kay's birthday, desperate to leave for dinner, a midwife asked him to repair a tear. It's labor ward. It's always someone's birthday. On labor ward, Kay agreed with a junior doctor's assessment that a patient needed an emergency cesarean for fetal distress. After the uterine incision, blood poured out instead of amniotic fluid, an abruption. Kay discovered an undiagnosed placenta previa that should have been caught on scans. The baby was stillborn. The patient hemorrhaged 12 liters of blood. Kay manually squeezed the uterus while consultants attempted various procedures. A senior surgeon performed an emergency hysterectomy. The patient went to intensive care with a poor prognosis. Kay tried to write his operation notes, but instead cried for an hour. That was his last diary entry. Though colleagues assured him it wasn't his fault, he couldn't stop thinking that if he'd been better, he might have saved both lives. He returned to work transformed, excessively cautious, performing cesareans at the slightest indication of trouble, refusing to let junior staff operate. He went 6 months without genuinely laughing. Kay explored part-time work and general practice, but couldn't face starting over. Eventually, he paused his training, did research and locum work, then quit medicine entirely. He kept the real reason hidden, deflecting with humorous anecdotes. He began writing and editing comedy for television, where a bad day meant a laptop crash rather than a death. Meeting former colleagues years later, Kay heard consistent reports of an NHS in crisis. What struck him most was how vividly every doctor remembers their worst cases, the room number, the patient's shoes, the song on the radio, with senior consultants still shaken by decades-old tragedies. During his UK book tour, Kay discovered how deeply people care about the NHS. Audiences packed village halls asking, "What can I do to help?" His answer? Ask the healthcare workers you know how their day was. Keep asking, even when they deflect. Give them the opportunity to offload after every shift. This simple act challenges the ingrained notion that healthcare workers shouldn't discuss their struggles, a belief partly responsible for people leaving the profession, stress-related absences, and, tragically, suicides. Remember that beneath the stethoscope is just a human, as fragile as anyone. Kay's journey from accidental doctor to reluctant whistleblower reveals the profound humanity behind medicine's clinical facade. We celebrate doctors as heroes, but heroes need support systems, not pedestals. They need permission to be human, to grieve, to admit when they're drowning. When we lose doctors like Kay, we don't just lose medical expertise, we lose the compassion that makes healthcare worth fighting for.